Beyond Athletic, episode 27.
I think, okay, there is a certain amount of talent which comes into play with anything in life. But ultimately, dedication and discipline will take you places.
You might be smarter, your daddy might own a company, but you will not outwork me.
This one right here is for the people.
I'm your host, Ryan J. Owens, current pro athlete, entrepreneur, and former USA national team volleyball player. I will not be defined by my athleticism alone, but I've learned how to leverage it to stay passionate about it and prepare for life. That's why the Beyond Athletic podcast was born. I'll bring you case studies of current and former elite athletes making it happen in life, as well as tips and lessons from top sources in sports, nutrition, fitness, entrepreneurship, and more. I'm here to tell you that you are beyond athletic. So today on the show is Bassam Bedas of Lebanon. He is a tennis player who played for a U.S. college and then is playing also professionally now. He's been on a little bit of leave of absence because of his injury, but he's rehabilitating and making a comeback soon here. And we get into his story about how he started, how he struggled like always, some epiphany moments, some light bulbs, aha moments where he just went, this is how you do it. We talk about how at Pepperdine, he was required to eat very, very well, and how this set the tone for the rest of his life so far, nutrition-wise, and having good eating habits and how that translates to having better performance. We also get into what it's like to get injured and be in a recovery phase and have to keep trying to fight back from those injuries, and how resilience and relentlessness can take you to new heights. So I think you're going to like this episode. He is a very wise young man, and I definitely talked a bunch in this one because I just thought we were so aligned in what we're thinking about. I hope you get a lot out of it. If you do, at Ryan J. Owens, and make sure that if you like this and you're reading on the blog, you leave a comment, you know, say what you like, what you don't. If you can, leave a rating and review on iTunes. This will help us go up in the search engine results and more people will find us. And if you know any tennis players, share this link with them. Just give it to them and maybe it'll help them. Maybe they'll take some lessons away from it, and I hope you do too. So without any further ado, Bassam Bedas. What is up, everyone? Ryan J. Owens here. Today's another athlete case study where athletes learn to be great in sport and life and to go beyond just being your typical athlete. Today's featured guest is Bassam Bedas. Did I say that right?
Yeah, you got it.
Awesome. Bassam, are you ready to share your story and go beyond just being athletic?
Absolutely, yeah. Excited to do it.
Awesome. Well, Bassam was born in London, England, UK in 1988. He grew up in Cairo, Egypt, and he's currently living in Beirut, Lebanon. He was ranked as high as number 20th on the ITF Juniors under 18. He was a three-time All-American and ranked number 11th singles at Pepperdine University, and he was 499th, is his highest ATP ranking so far. So there's just an overview, and why don't you just take a moment to share just a bit more about you personally? I know you hopped around a bit, and then expand upon where you are now in your life and your career.
Sure. So as you already said, I was born in London, and I grew up in Egypt, and the reason I grew up in Egypt is basically because we've had a civil war in Lebanon from the 70s to, well, basically the early 90s, but to an extent it's never really ended. And a lot of Lebanese, you always meet Lebanese people around the world because of the fact that a lot of them left during the civil war. Mm-hmm. So you have a lot of them in South America, a lot of them left to West Africa, and also a lot in Canada. So it just happened that my family grew up in Egypt because of the fact that my father was able to find work there. And yeah, I have two older brothers and a sister, and they're quite a bit older than me. So, you know, even though the war ended by the time I was growing up, I'd already gotten into the school system, and it was just convenient for me to ride it out there, you know?
Yeah. And a little bit more about where you're at now in your career.
I graduated in summer of 2011. I started, I tried to start out playing on the Pro Tour. I did well that summer. I continued into the winter, and I got injured about 4 or 5 months after I started playing on the tour. I was at my highest ranking at the time. And at the time, I thought I had a very minor shoulder injury, but it turned out it took a lot longer to heal than I expected. And it wasn't even about letting it heal. It was about finding the right person to diagnose me. Because I went around for about a year and a half, 2 years before I finally found someone who knew what was going on.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a rough time. That took me to about earlier this summer when I had my shoulder surgery. And since then, I've had some lower back issues, which I'm trying to sort out as quickly as possible so I can start playing on tour again this year. Because, you know, I told myself that I don't want to be lingering around in sort of limbo between tennis and my professional life for too long. I've been doing it for almost 3 years now. And, you know, while you want to give yourself the chance to pursue your dreams, ultimately you have to carry on with your life. So I think this is the last year where I'm going to try to get healthy. And if it doesn't work out, you know, I've got to hang up the racket.
Yeah, I hear you there. So you're 26, right?
Right, I just turned 26 about 2 weeks ago.
Nice. Happy belated birthday.
Thanks.
What I'd like to do before we get into today's topics, could you just share a favorite quote or mantra?
Yeah, definitely. Something I haven't mentioned is that I'm a very big football fan. That's, you know, soccer for the Americans who are listening. And I'm a very big fan of Manchester United. And our captain growing up was famous for his relentlessness. And he always had this quote that he used to use, which was, fail to prepare, prepare to fail. And I mean, I guess you could say it's a cliche, and there's many ways to say that. But, you know, cliches are cliches for a reason, because they're usually true.
Yeah. And what does that mean just for you personally?
I mean, it's, you know, usually a certain level of tennis, everyone is pretty pretty even in terms of their talent, how well they've trained, et cetera, et cetera. But it's the small things that make a difference. And things like nutrition. I mean, I remember at Pepperdine, we must have been the healthiest eating tennis team in the country, because our coaches put so much emphasis on nutrition and things like that. Just the small things that make, you know, 1% or 0.5% difference, but in the end it counts for a lot.
This is really nice to hear, because so often, and even in college sports, I mean, I work with a lot of young girls that go over to NCAA and some young guys now, but I noticed that there's just not enough coaches out there and schools even that are really involved in the nutrition of especially the athletes. Because, you know, if let's say the average person, your average Joe or Jane walking around sees an athlete eat crap, it's just like reinforcement to be like, yo, if they can do it, I can do it. But they don't understand that, yes, we're going to get the same. Yeah, we're burning a lot of that stuff off. But here's one of the other issues. It's also going to show up down the line for us. It's just not going to show up as fast because we're staying so healthy, but it's still going to hurt us, you know? So give it just really quick. I'm interested. Give a nice example of, let's say, a day's diet that Pepperdine would have you guys do on, like, travel days, let's say.
Well, you know, to be honest, my first year there, we were like any other team. We eat whatever. I mean, to a certain extent. But then my second year, our assistant coach changed, and he was very nutritionally aware. And we brought in a team nutritionist, and we were doing tests to make sure we understood what we had to eat. And it was just basically down to us, you know?
Yeah.
So obviously no one was touching Cokes or soft drinks, anything with sugar in it. We're trying to avoid all white breads, any sort of carbohydrates that were fast burning. We were just cutting them out. Mm-hmm. Sauces, no sauces, pretty much. It was mainly like brown bread, brown pasta, brown rice with lean meats, just grilled basically, mm-hmm. vegetables. Yeah.
No, that's good. I just want to give people an example because this is so important, nutrition. So anyways, I want to take it back just a couple steps because we're at the beginning, but there's something that you mentioned about the quote, fail to prepare, prepare to fail by Roy Keane. Is that how you say his name? Keane, right?
Yeah.
So what I love that you said was that he was relentless. And for everybody out there listening, if there's a lot of international listeners, if you don't know the word, look it up, because relentlessness, this, if you have this quality, you can achieve so much, not just in sports. It is just basically the will to just keep going, not to stop. Just exactly. Whatever it takes to make it happen, you're going to do it. And it actually brings to mind, and I don't know if you've read this book, Bassam, but it's called Relentless by Tim S. Grover. And he's the personal... Yeah, you have it?
No, I haven't read it, but I will look it up.
You got to. He's the guy who took Michael Jordan to his last, like his ultimate level. And also, I mean, the top guys in the NBA right now, and I'm not a big sports guy, so I think it's, what is it, like LeBron, and then there's like the guy that's like one of his best friends who's also amazing. He's also their coach now. So if you don't know that book, check it out. Tim S. Grover is the author. It's fantastic. So what I like to do now is ask you, just sometimes we lose sight of all of the great things that are going on when, you know, times might get hard, and you've obviously had some rough times these last few years.
Yeah.
And let me just ask you, what are you most grateful for today? And I don't mean in your whole life, but I mean, if you were to pick some things from just today, what would they be?
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's funny because, as you said, I might be going through some dark times now with my injuries, but at the same time, they make me appreciate the fact, you know, everything I've had, mm-hmm. and the fact that I'm even able to continue pursuing it despite my injuries. And I think, you know, my parents have helped me so much, and, you know, they've given up a lot to help me chase my dreams. And that's definitely something, you know, I wouldn't have been able to go this long without them. So that's definitely something I'm thankful for.
Yeah. And speaking of people that you're thankful for, who are some of the biggest mentors in your life so far?
Yeah, well, you know, I just went over, you know, mentioning my parents.
Mm-hmm.
I think most people would probably go to them first as a main mentor or someone you're thankful to.
Well, we would hope.
Yeah, definitely. Of course, I mean, of course, you know how it is. Your first, your college coach, they're a big influence on your life because, you know, you're 17, 18, going into college, you're still immature, you're still a kid. By the time you leave college, hopefully you're a man, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So those 3-4 years, 4.5 years that you spend with them is going to have a big impact on your life.
And who was your coach?
My head coach was Adam Steinberg.
And then you had a bunch of other coaches, huh?
Yeah, we had an assistant, Per Nielsen, my first year. He was a great guy from Sweden. And my last 3 years, we had an assistant, Nick Carlos, who is currently the head coach at Cal Poly, who is also a very good guy. And all three of them brought something different to the table, which I think is very important.
Yeah.
So, I mean, from that standpoint, we were lucky, you know. We definitely had a lot of help out there.
Yeah. And what I like to do now is, I mean, obviously, we're talking about help. You only need help because you're going to have struggles, right? We're all going to have them. And something I want all athletes, especially the younger ones, to realize is that if you want to be great in whatever sport you're going to choose and in life, it's going to take a lot of struggles. It's going to take you failing and keep on going, things like that. And so what I want to do right now, Bassam, is for you to take us back and share one of the biggest struggles or failures so far that you've had, and just put us in that moment. Let's hear a story.
Okay, well, I believe I was a senior at the time at Pepperdine, and I was the number one player on the team, and I was also the team captain. I think I was the only senior as well on the team, because I had come in my freshman year with two other guys, but they had one had turned pro after his second year, and the other had quit tennis. So I was the lone senior. The captaincy was basically on my shoulders, when usually on a tennis team it's shared between a couple of guys. Mm-hmm. And we're having a rough season. It was spring 2010. We were underachieving, maybe not underperforming, but underachieving for one reason or another. We had a couple of young guys on the team. Maybe I wasn't doing as good a job as I could have been doing with mentoring them. And, you know, it was kind of a downward spiral. We're ranked around 20 in the country, where usually Pepperdine would like to be sitting somewhere in the top 10. And, you know, everyone was just getting on each other's backs. You know, the coaches were kind of getting on us. We were getting on each other. We were getting on the coaches. And it was just kind of a tough time. And we were about to play Minnesota, who were ranked, I think, in the 40s maybe, or even the 50s. And we were playing them at home. And the way college tennis works is that you play the doubles matches first, and then you go into the locker room for about 10 minutes, have a quick meeting, and then go out again for the singles. Mm-hmm. And that day was a pretty rough doubles day for us. We lost the doubles. Me and my partner struggled big time, whereas usually we're pretty solid. And we walked into the locker room, and we were ready for, you know, thunderstorm, I guess, in there. And it was pretty bad. It got a little bit personal between us and the coaches. And I took it very personally. And I didn't leave it in the locker room. So when I walked out to play the singles, I was still in that, you know, crappy mindset, where I just was in a haze. And I lost the singles match. We ended up losing 4-3 to Minnesota. And I lost a match I really, really shouldn't have lost. And, you know, basically the match turned because I lost that match. Well, otherwise, we would have won 4-3. And I just, you know, at the time, I wasn't really I just felt like I wasn't there. I was in the stands watching myself play, kind of, and I was just going through the motions. And afterwards, you're thinking, wow, you know, I mean, it was just so immature of me to just stand, you know, go through the match that way in such an important match. Mm-hmm. Because it ended up dropping our ranking big time, and knocked us out of the NCAA tournament earlier than it should have, because we should have been seeded in the top 16 if we hadn't lost that match. And so it ended my college career prematurely as well. So, you know, I paid for it in the long run.
If you wanted listeners to take away, like, one major thing, or just in general something, what would that be from this lesson?
I think you have to, you know, compartmentalizing everything. You know, mm-hmm. I think I'm a very emotional person, and I take things to heart pretty easily. But, you know, I think you can't do that in sports, especially in team sports and college sports, when you're dealing with a coach. And, you know, on the tour, it's different. When you're out there on your own, you don't have someone getting on your back as much, unless you're traveling with a coach. And you're usually paying them, so it's kind of a different dynamic. Whereas in college, you're sort of like an employee. And, you know, things are expected of you. And you have to be able to understand why someone's getting on your back, and why, you know, why conflicts occur when you're underperforming, underachieving. And, you know, you can't let things like that affect you. Yeah. You have to be mature enough to, you know, put it into a compartment and deal with it later on, you know? Mm-hmm. So I definitely wish I could have taken that day back, but it's a lesson you learn.
Yeah. There's a few things I'd love to just highlight in there that you talked about. I mean, you talked about how you were already struggling as a team. You went into this tournament and you knew that maybe you weren't mentoring, for instance, the younger guys on the team as well as perhaps you should, since you were in more of a captain role. So you know your personal responsibility. That's really important, that you knew, like, okay, I do have this responsibility. That's one thing that I want people to take away, is that if you are one of the older or more experienced players on your team or in some kind of effort that's dealing with a team, then it's really important that you hold others accountable and help them along, you know, and make sure you can do whatever you can. But so you learn that lesson there. Then you show up and you have basically the coach and whatever, it gets personal, everybody's not happy. And then you take that and instead of dropping it, and like you say, I'd like to kind of use a little bit different term, not compartmentalization, because it kind of means you store something away for later. But I want to say, just recognize, okay, this happened. I'm going to readdress that at a later time. I'm not going to hold it inside. I'm going to go give my 100% on the court. Because once you get on the court or field or whatever you do, when the whistle blows or whenever you're supposed to start, you should have cleared your mind right before that and be present. Yeah. Because you said you weren't there. You know, you weren't present. You didn't actually show up. Like, your body was there, but you were miles away, pretty much. And so I think a lot of people can, and I certainly can, say that I've gone into a game or a training and I just was emotional. I let something, you know, bother me. And you've got to be able to drop things. And then when that's over, you can address whoever you need to address in a very respectful way and just say, hey, I just like to chat about what happened. And clear some things up and see that we can come to an understanding. So thanks for that lesson. Listen, I want you now, I mean, I know we just talked about a big struggle of yours, and obviously I know there's a little bit of some regret there. And what's great is from these lessons, we can learn how not to make these mistakes in the future. And so what I'd like to talk about now is something a little more positive. And just take us to the moment when you realized, okay, this is what I've got to do in tennis to succeed and get to where I need to get to, and I'm going to do it. Was there a key moment like that, a light bulb moment for you?
You know, it's funny because it's this is kind of an interesting moment to select. But for me, it kind of came when I got injured because, you know, when you're young, you think you're invincible, you know. In Egypt, we were taught good things on the court. We were taught how to work hard physically. But we weren't taught, you know, we weren't given great emphasis on recovery and taking care of our bodies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those are habits that I never really picked up from a young age. And I think our coaches at Pepperdine didn't emphasize it enough either because, you know, they think they're dealing with 18, 19-year-olds. They're supposed to be men. But ultimately, some people have come in with different habits than others. Some might be less mature than others. And we still have to have that hammered into us, even at that age, that you have to, you know, stretch, foam roll, you know, take care of your body in that way and do it religiously. Mm-hmm. And, you know, up till my injury, I just wasn't doing it the way I should have.
Yeah.
And now, you know, now I've taken a greater interest in it. I'm reading up a lot on the human body, physiotherapy techniques, just different ways to keep the body in shape. And, you know, maybe it's too little too late, but at least it's something I'll carry with me for the rest of my life, and will probably preach to others as well.
Well, I can tell you this, it's too late to change what's already happened, but it's definitely not too late to change what's gonna happen, because you still have some time left to play, and however long that is, you know, you're going to be able to move forward better than you were. And so that's, I mean, one of my takeaways from that is that, you know, you didn't have these habits when you were younger and you had to learn them the hard way. And it's really hard when your light bulb moment has to come in a time that's dark. But you know what? A lot of the times that's when our light bulb moments hit us, is when we're down and we're in maybe the worst place we could be. You know, the feelings where you're like, you're injured and you just go, oh my God, I actually cannot play my sport right now because of this injury. What could I have done differently, or what do I have to do to get back? So I love that you mentioned this stuff about stretching and foam rolling, and like you said, religiously, because it's actually really important. And I've actually been working on just coming up with a better, let's say, daily ritual for myself, because I've already set up kind of like my morning ritual, and we're going to get into later kind of your morning ritual. But what I definitely like to do is, I mean, I do 3 minutes of just planks continuously. And then I have my tennis ball, my lacrosse ball, and my foam roller that sit out in my living room on the carpet at all times. So, like, if I'm watching a movie
or if I'm waiting for my food to cook, then I'm probably listening to a podcast and I'm foam rolling, or I've got that lacrosse ball in my muscle trying to just get out knots. Because like you said, your body's got to be prepared to work at all times. And you don't get like an off season for that kind of stuff. You have to prehabilitate. Have you heard of that before?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is a concept I want people to really know about, because I was speaking with somebody here in Belgrade, Serbia, just a day ago, and they go, what? And this person owns one of the nicest fitness facilities in this country. And I said, hey, I'd love to exchange, you know, maybe some time for 15 minutes per day where I can use your court for free, and I can do maybe some movement prehab stuff with your kids that are playing some of your sports once or twice a week, no problem, you know? And then he goes, what is prehab? What's mobility? And I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, guys, get out there, learn about it. And Bassam, you're going to love an upcoming guest on the show. His name is Kelly Starrett. Have you heard of him?
Oh, Soft Leopard.
Hey, man, you have. He's coming on the show. We're doing the show on like around the 13th, so it'll be out at the end of the month. And
nice.
Awesome guy, best-selling author of Becoming a Supple Leopard, like you're mentioning. And now, I don't know if you've read it, but he's also got like Ready to Run, his new book. So,
okay, no, I'll look out for it, yeah.
Yeah, and for listeners out there, it's Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y, Starrett. It's S-T-A-R-R-E-T-T. And just YouTube, look on YouTube at his videos. If you're having problems with your ankles, with your back, with your knees, anything, hips, check him out. I mean, that guy has got it down. It's amazing. So thanks so much for sharing all that. I'd love to go now into your proudest moment so far.
You know, it's funny. It's not so much a specific moment. Well, I guess it sort of is, but getting to Pepperdine, being offered a scholarship to a school as good as Pepperdine, because, you know, I'm a competitive person, and a lot of tennis players are, I guess all athletes have to be to a certain extent. But when you're a competitive person, you usually compare yourself to, you know, people who are the best in the world, because that's what you want to, the level you want to achieve. So a lot of the time, you know, you're just thinking, wow, you know, I'm really not there. I'm really not, you know, on the same planet as these guys. But when you look at the big picture and you think how many people play your sport, how many universities there are in the States, the fact that I was able to get to a school with as great a tennis tradition as Pepperdine, and, you know, even an academic tradition, it was, when I look back on it, I think that was a really special achievement for me.
Nah.
And, you know, the whole college system in the States, the college sports system, is something I'm going to be a lifelong fan, because I'd recommend it to anyone from now on.
Now, what are some of the things I'd love to hear that stood out to you that just made it great?
Everything, really, you know, from the moment I set foot there, the way they take care of you, you know, you have people helping you plan your classes, helping you study, helping you get through your classes. The coaches who are willing to come out day and night to help you if you ask them to. It was just kind of a family atmosphere. Even the physiotherapy team, and the trainers and the conditioning. It's just it's better than a sports academy, you know, the care that we get there.
Wow.
And that was just a small school like Pepperdine. So I can't imagine going to a big school like Florida or Ohio State and, you know, the stuff that they see out there.
Yeah, we actually have that in common. I was, it makes me sad to this day, but I was going to go play for Marv Dunphy, the volleyball coach there.
Pepperdine,
and I'd gotten scouted to go there, and it was my top choice over Hawaii and USC. And then matriculation had made a mistake. So they looked at me as a 2-year to a 4-year, but really I was a 4-year to a 2-year back to a 4-year school. And so I was missing, can you believe it? I was like up in San Francisco, I drove with a friend up there, and I'm in summer school, and literally like I took summer school only for me. Like I was just like, oh, I want to take this art class and this business class because I'm interested in it. But I'm not always going to show up because I don't even need it. You know, it was just electives that I was doing. And Marv Dunphy called me. He's like, hey, Ryan, I don't know if you've ever met him. Have you?
Yeah, all the time. He taught a class at Pepperdine. He's a great guy.
And his, you know his demeanor, so you can just imagine how calm and whatever. Yeah. And so he calls me, and he's very calm but powerful, and he's just like, Ryan, have some news, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. He told me this, and I just remember thinking, oh, my God, how do I say, like, I have these classes, and it's possible, but I haven't been showing up half of the time, you know? And my dream to go to school ended there because someone made an error, and I had no idea that I would even need to go to summer school to get six more units, man. Six more units. So, but Pepperdine, for people out there, it's in Malibu, California, and it is majestic. I mean, I mean, you're basically, when you drive up to Pepperdine, you come up PCH, which is Pacific Coast Highway. And I just want to take a moment to tell the story to people because, Bassam, man, you know it. It's an incredible place. You drive up and you've got the Pacific Ocean on your left, if you're driving, let's say, up north from LA. And then you've got the school up on the right in this hill. And it's just unreal how beautiful it is. And you get on that campus and it's just spotless. There's incredible resources there. And just you're staring all day at the water. I don't know how you get work done, but.
Well, that's the thing. You know, it kind of, it's sad to say. It's almost scary to say. But after a while, you don't even notice where you are. And I look back now and I think, wow, you know, I spent 4 years there and I just. I never thought like, wow, where the hell am I, you know? Like, where is this place? Looking back, it's just incredible how little we took it in, you know, because you're so, when you're in school and you're an athlete, you're so self-absorbed, I guess, or just, you know, you've got so much going on and you're just wrapped in your problems, your classes, your exams, your matches, and you just don't take the time to really soak it all in, I guess.
I hear you.
Before you know it, it's all over.
Yeah, this is one of the biggest things, the biggest challenges you can have in athletics, because, you know, a lot of athletes, they don't get the same opportunities, and especially, let's say you're from a place that doesn't have a system like the U.S. system where the sports and schools are all together from even middle school, you know, and you can go all the way through college and having your sport and school together and trying to, especially when you get to university and college, you can make your schedule around your sport. And so one of the things that's hardest, though, and I see this all the time, is kids, they have real trouble trying to balance how to not only be successful in their sport, but school, because it's required. Because if you're not good enough in school, you cannot play in sports. And so the other side of that is also trying to balance their personal life. So you see some athletes that'll go head under, you know, into partying. And then you see others that are just like never seen in the party scene and they stay in the books or their sports. So it's healthy though, to find some kind of balance. So I'm glad that you mentioned that. One of the things that I'd like to talk about now, I mean, we've talked about a bunch so far, but planning is so important. It's so important not to have a backup plan, but just to have a life plan. And sports is just part of that. And so using sports as a vehicle, I talk about this all the time, but it's so important because so many careers, I mean, within 2 to 5 years of retiring from most pro sports in America, you have 60 to 80% of football, baseball, and basketball players that are going to be broke, divorced, or unemployed. And almost 40% break the law. They're actually like, you know, they have rap sheets. You know, records. And this is incredible. So I love that you went to school, you took a chance, and you got your degree in business admin, right?
Yeah.
And so what I'd like to ask you now is, I want you to add into this, what's got you most excited these days? I have a feeling I know what it is. And because you've been working your butt off. And then what's coming from you in the future?
Yeah, well, I mean, like I said, it's been a long time with my rehab. I've had two surgeries in the last 2 years. And for the time being, you know, I've got my crosshairs on tennis again, you know, getting my body back in shape, feeling like an athlete for the first time in 2.5-3 years. Because it's, you know, it's a great feeling to feel strong and healthy and doing, you know, traveling the world, doing what you love. But in the last 2-3 years, I have had the time to, you know, for the first time in my life, really think realistically about life after tennis. Because, you know, when you're young, when you're in college, you always think, you know, it's easy. I'm just going to be a tennis player. But in reality, it's not that way. You know, only 80, 90 people make a living off of tennis a year. And wow. It's one of the most competitive sports out there.
80 to 90 people. I hope people are listening to that. Under 100 people make a living off of tennis.
Exactly. And I mean, I didn't even want to go to university. I wanted to just play pro. You know, I thought I was a good junior, which I thought meant a lot. But in reality, it doesn't always translate.
Yeah.
I had good people around me who, you know, who told me, look, you got to go to college. If you're so good and you're winning the NCAAs in your first year, you know, go play pro. But if you're not, then I advise you to stay in college. And they were right, because when I got to college, I understood how good the level of college sports were.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what's the plan for you? I mean, do you have a plan for after sports?
I'm still, you know, I've dabbled in a few things, you could say. I have a lot of friends who have that sort of entrepreneurial mindset, mm-hmm. where they're always looking to, you know, to make it on their own. And I think that's definitely the way I want to go when I'm done, because I think it's difficult to start a career at 28, 29, or even hopefully later if tennis goes well. It's difficult to get started on a regular career path at that age. I think it's going to have to be something that I start working on, you know, right now, this year, next year on the side, and build up as I'm playing tennis, you know, so that when I'm done, I can take it to the next level. Yeah. But I'm still kind of working out what that thing will be specifically. Yeah.
I love that you mentioned this about entrepreneurial and thinking a little bit more outside of the box. Like, I think going into careers can be great, but one of the downsides is that if it's not something that truly allows you freedom, which means that you just have control of your time, then it could be, you know, something that takes away a lot from your life. And athletes really, they have a hard time transitioning to careers, especially that aren't creative. And that's why a lot of athletes, do so well in entrepreneurship, because, which is business ownership, because they can be creative and they understand how a team works and how you can build something, and you need to fail, and you know how to goal plan. There's all these things that are wrapped up in that. So today I was actually watching the ATP Doha stop.
Right.
And I saw a German, what was his name? Mikhail, do you know his last name? He's like, man, he's like 100 and, huh?
Are you sure he's German?
Yeah, he's German. He's Mikhail, and I actually thought he might be like Spanish or something because of his last name. Anyways, he beat Rafael Nadal today.
Oh, Berrer, the Swiss.
Yeah, Berrer. And, he's not German.
No, it's Swiss, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought he was German.
I could be wrong, though.
And so I watched...
No, he's German. You're right. Sorry.
Yeah, I watched him play, and it was incredible. And I just thought, check this guy out, because he was getting beat down. He got beat down 6-1 in the first game. And I mean, it was... Or first set, I think you call it, right?
Yeah.
And I could just see the look on his face. You know how you can notice when another athlete is just like, no. I'm not going out like this. And he turned around, and I couldn't believe like how relentless he was. And like even at the end of the match, and I love how, you know, announcers, they're all cozy in their little box talking about the sport, but it's really so much harder when you're down there doing it. And like, you could just tell, one of the comments though they actually made that was good is he goes, he is not going to allow this to go in someone else's way. He's not going to change his game at all at this point. Like, he's fully committed. And I love that. And the lesson that I want people to take away from that, because you're talking about, you don't know how much longer you're going to play. And the great thing about that is, Bassam, you can play freely because you don't know. you don't know what's going to happen, and you've been through hell already. It can't get worse. The only thing that could happen is you can't play anymore. So you just kind of leave it all out there, because a lot of people will say things like, I just had a recent guest on who was saying, and a tennis player, talking about one of his biggest failures was when he just didn't give that 100% and he knew he could have, but he just eased up a little bit and ended up losing something he shouldn't have lost, or he could have won. So anyways, all right, that's a ton of stuff. I love it. I want to get to the tip jar here. So this is going to be Bassam's tip jar, okay? And we're going to go through some things kind of quickly. We're just going to give some tips and tools for people to use. So I'm going to start with, what's the best advice you ever received?
I would say it was when I got injured. I'd been doing fairly well in my first few tournaments on the tour. I'd gotten my ranking up just inside 500, as in the 400s. And I got injured and I started thinking, you know, do I really want this? I'm getting up there in age. Maybe it's time for me to start my eventual career. You know, traveling was getting on me, you know, the hard work on court. And I started speaking to a couple of guys who had, had played tennis and got into 300, 200 in the world, and then just quit because they couldn't make it. And they were, you know, sitting at a desk job, and I was talking to them, and they were telling me, you know, man, if I could do it all over again, I would have kept going till I was 35. You know, I would never have just quit like that, because no matter how tough and how bad you think it can be on tour at times, it's always better than the alternative.
Mm.
And I think that's fueled me for the last few years. It's very tennis specific, I think. But it has fueled me for the last few years with regards to, you know, trying to come back from injuries and not just going a different route in my life.
Yeah. And what's one of the first things you like to do when you come to a new arena to play?
Well, it's usually a different country when we're going. So, you know, just check out the area where I'm staying in, you know, find out where you can get your essentials, your healthy stuff to eat, you know, good places, good restaurants to eat. And just check out the courts, where you can get food at the courts, meet the stringer, meet the physio. The way things are going, you have to meet the physiotherapist. Just hit some balls and, you know, sweat out a little bit on your first day, I guess.
Nice. And what personal habit do you believe contributed most to your success?
I think my intensity in training. It's something our college coach, Adam Steinberg, always tried to instill in his players.
Mm.
But I think I had it even before I got to college, because I loved training. I mean, you know, there are some aspects of training that I don't enjoy. Kind of just running on a treadmill or doing sprints, etc. But I love tennis specific training. You know, I've always liked that, and it's never been a problem for me to throw myself into it 110%. So I think that's played a huge role in whatever success I have had.
Yeah. And how long do you like to sleep, and what's your morning ritual?
You know, I usually sleep till these days about 8-9.
How many hours?
About between 7 and 8 hours.
Hmm.
When I was playing, I'd be waking up earlier, but now I have a little bit less to do in my day, so I'm kind of giving myself that leeway. The first thing I usually do when I wake up is, it's funny how you're talking about the foam rollers on your floor, but yeah, these days I've been rolling my hips out a lot. I've been doing a couple of light exercises to get my hips moving in the morning, because that's a huge part of back injuries.
Huge.
Maintaining, mobility in your hips. So I've been rolling my hips out a lot and just doing the hip mobility stuff that I've been given. And hoping it takes.
Yeah. And name one way that you like to improve yourself as a person, not just as an athlete.
I like to read a lot. I think that was, one of my New Year resolutions last year, and I think I really succeeded with that. I read a lot of books. I've read all sorts of books. You know, I've read business books. I've read I'm reading Mike Tyson's autobiography now, you know. I read a lot of political books. So I just like to read about, you know, things all across the spectrum.
And have you ever tried to cross train to just kind of get some different perspective and some different movements?
By cross training, you mean?
In a different sport, like just picking something even as a hobby.
Yeah, I mean, I love playing soccer. Obviously, with my lower back now, it's a little bit difficult to do other sports. I have to kind of be careful. But yeah, when I had my shoulder issues, I was playing a lot of soccer. It was definitely keeping me pretty fit. You know, I remember we tried our hand at volleyball a couple of times on the sand volleyball courts at Pepperdine. I mean, I enjoy all sports, really.
Yeah. I think it's really important that we play other sports or at least do some other active activities because it adds so much. I mean, I know one of my goals for this new year is I've always just had an itch to play handball. I don't know what it is, but I saw it the first time in Germany and then I dated a handball player and I just remember going, man, this sport just seems like it's for me.
And it's so big in Europe, huh?
Yeah, it's so big and I'd never seen it before and I just thought, wow, this is so cool. So it's like my two top sports that I really want to learn this year is tennis and handball. So I might be calling you up for some tips.
Yeah, go for it. Next time you're in Lebanon.
Awesome. Actually, that might be this summer, so I might hit you up.
Cool, cool.
Listen, so I think you'd agree, adding value, I know we talked about this, it's so important, and that we do it by this adding value. We do it by sharing time and knowledge, our passion, our compassion, our love with people. It's just extremely important that we give back, we pay it forward. And knowing that, I want to ask you a couple questions. And the first is, what book would you give away as a gift and why?
Ooh, that is a very heavy question. Have you read the book Tuesdays with Maury?
No.
Have you heard? Okay, well, that book, it was turned into a movie, I think. The movie is horrible, though. Don't watch the movie. Tuesdays with Maury is written by a guy. And, you know, he was in the finance world, I believe. I read the book 3-4 years ago. He was in the finance world and, you know, he's just moving along at the fast pace that people in the finance world do. And one day he was on a couch watching TV and he saw his old professor Maury on the news. And I think Maury had Lou Gehrig's disease or something similar, one of those diseases where your body slowly shuts down. And this was, Maury was this guy's favorite professor when he was at university. He used to sit with him a lot. They used to have lunch together. He used to talk about life. And this guy had just not contacted Maury for years. I think it was like a decade since he'd graduated. And out of nowhere, he saw Maury on the TV. And he was like, man, I have to get in touch with this guy again. So he got in contact with Maury. He rocked up to his house on a Tuesday. They started talking. It was like they'd never, you know, they'd never left each other. And from then on, every Tuesday, he'd go back to Maury's house, talk to him, take notes on what Maury was saying. And each Tuesday was a different topic. So I think they were covering things like love on one Tuesday, relationships on another, family on another. And yeah, those are the collection of chapters. They're named after each topic he covered on the Tuesdays with Maury. And yeah, he made it into a book until Maury passed away. I think it was 8 or 9 Tuesdays after that, maybe.
Yeah, I was looking it up when you first started, and the book was written by Mitch Albom, and right. He was actually a newspaper sports columnist, and he spent a lot of time with his 80-year-old sociology professor, so it's a real story. He had ALS. I mean, I could see why you would recommend it, because it's a great mentorship book.
Exactly. And it's just the fact that Maury knows that he's dying. So he's kind of speaking with the wisdom or the hindsight that someone has already lived their life has. So it was just interesting. It's an interesting book, and it kind of, there are a lot of little tips and lessons you can take from it.
Yeah, I love that. And you can find that book online. It says there's audio versions of it. And that's another great thing that people just realize. You can educate yourself while you're on the go, while you're working out, you're sitting around, while you're washing dishes, walking, driving. You can put in your ear books on tape, books like stream through audio. I mean, audible.com is a great example of that. Podcasts are amazing. You can listen to books read over podcasts. You can listen to this show, obviously, going to iTunes and putting in Beyond Athletic. But just take more time to educate yourself and get mentors in your life that could teach you what you want to know so you can improve yourself. So thanks for recommending that book. Is there a special program or cause, like organization or something like that, you support that adds value to other people?
Well, I don't like to get too political, but my family is initially Palestinian.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of a supporter of the Palestinian cause in many different ways. Okay. I used to go to protests, mainly just in support of nothing rather than against something, you know?
Okay. And this is something I know you wrote a little bit about, and I mean, no one said anything yet political on the show, but here's what I think. Like, man, if you believe in something, go support it, get around other people that support that. And, you know, if it's definitely trying to build something up instead of tearing something down, that's unless it's something bad that you're tearing down, you know, then I say go for it. You know, if it's positive, why not add that to the world if it can do something better?
Yeah. So it's, you know, so it's up to the individual to assess whether, you know, the action you're taking is in benefit of what you want to, you know, it's taking you to what you want to achieve.
Yeah, or exactly. Very well said. Thanks for sharing that. And I want people to know, I'd like to take a second to just say Elite Sports Students is a project that I'm starting, and with the help of a lot of Olympians and pro athletes and like yourself, Bassam, that basically is going to be a network of mentors and solutions available online for free tutoring and courses in whatever you're having trouble with in school. And we're going to be setting up exposure tournaments and camps that basically can get kids' names out there, not just for their sport accolades and their level to get recruited by, let's say, US and Canadian schools, but also to be seen in an academic world. You know, we'll have things that are like entrepreneurship challenges, you know, and stuff like that. And so if you're interested, go to beyondathletic.com/ESS. And if you know some kids or anything like that, just one person, email them that link, email them the show, this link, and just try and improve someone's life. So I know that you're down to be a part of that. So I hope I can get you involved with that too, Bassam.
Yeah, sounds good.
Before you tell listeners how they can connect with you personally, follow you along your journey, there's just two last things. I'm going to give you a do-over, okay? A do-over in your athletic career. You're starting from the same place that you started before, okay? You have the same resources that you had before, but now you have a mentorship podcast like this where we have guests like yourself and Olympians and people like Kelly Starrett, okay? And you know everything, though, that you know now. What would you do to set yourself up for success?
You know, I mean, taking care of my body, it's a number one. I mean, as an athlete, taking care of my body, that's a number one thing. I would have started, you know, eating healthier a lot earlier in my life rather than at 19 years old. I probably would have started at 14, 15. And definitely, you know, the mobility stuff, the flexibility stuff, I would have started again at 14, 15 as well, because, you know, it's so much tougher at the age I'm at now, you know, 25, 26. To change your body, because it's been almost set in stone. So, I mean, your body is, it's your number one asset as an athlete. And, you know, you can't overstate how important it is to keep it in fighting shape.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent advice. And last thing, what is your definition of an athlete?
That's a good question. That is a very good question, because, you know, you get a lot of people who do CrossFit, and the term athlete is kind of, it's such a vague term. It's difficult to, I would say an athlete is someone who, is playing a sport, you know, and they're competing at that sport. So I wouldn't say someone who just plays football for fun or plays tennis for fun is necessarily an athlete. I think the desire to push yourself into competition is maybe what separates someone who plays takes something as a hobby and someone who is an actual athlete.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thanks for sharing. Now, I know I talked a little bit about this, but I'm going to turn it over to you. But before I do, I just want to say that my goal with this show is to help beyond a million current and future athletes. And I want them to use sport as a vehicle to get to where they want to be in life and just be more happy in life. Because being fit and competing, whether or not, let's say you go pro, let's say you just go to college, you know, or let's say you just do it in high school or just as a hobby, it's a great outlet to just have some a different type of stress. Like they call it a eustress, actually. So it's something that's a positive stressor in your life that can actually add a ton of value. But I want to teach people that they can use the things that they learn in sport towards their life and their success. And their success is really whatever they set out to do in life. If you can achieve that, then I think you're successful. You don't want to try and achieve what other people achieved, because that's them. That's their dream. Achieve what you want. And so I just want to say thank you for being on the show, because it's great to have young guys like you, especially very intelligent, obviously highly motivated people. And I see what you've done, man. And I see how hard you've worked. And actually, I remember I talked about you with Dino, and he was just like, yeah, man, I know he got injured. That guy worked so hard, and I know he's coming back. So it's just really inspiring to see people like you. And I love that you're thinking outside the box, and I wish you the best, and I'm definitely going to follow you. And so why don't you just leave a couple ways that people can connect with you, and then some sharing, like some parting pieces of wisdom, and then we'll say goodbye.
Well, I mean, firstly, I wanted to thank you for having me on. I really like what you're doing. I think it's great.
Thank you.
You know, I don't really tweet much. Maybe when I get back on tour, I will be tweeting under my real name. I have an Instagram account, which is BG Betas. I would say the one thing that you can translate into any area of your life is dedication. You know, I always talk about with my tennis playing, my teammates at university, how if we had dedicated the same amount of hours that we've dedicated to tennis in any other area of life, we would have been, you know, highly successful in anything. I think, okay, there is a certain amount of talent which comes into play with anything in life. But ultimately, dedication and discipline will take you places.
I love that, man. Beautifully said. Dedication and discipline will take you places. So, all right, that's Basam Bedas. Thank you so much for being on the show, bud. Did you like the show? Leave a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher.com so others will find us, and share the love. Think of one person that could benefit and send them the link for this episode. For more resources and tips, go to beyondathletic.com or tweet us at Beyond Athletic. I appreciate and thank you for listening.
What we do in life echoes in eternity.
I'm gonna show you how great I am.
And this concludes our Chicago show. Please stay tuned.